Hello, this is Michael Stauffer for LittleShootMatters.org. Today, I'm interviewing Bob Birkin, who is a candidate for trustee for the Village of Littleshoot. Hello, Bob.
Hello.
Let's get started with some basic questions here. Why are you running for office? Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're interested in serving the public as a Littleshoot Village trustee.
I'm married. I have four children. I've been a pipe fitter for 32 years, and I've lived in the Village of Littleshoot my entire life. And the reason I decided to run for Village Trustee is because with my personal experiences and with talking with different citizens of the Village, many people are fed up with the way the Village is being run, and they're ready for a change.
What kind of change are you hearing that people want?
Many people question the way things have gone about over the last few years. Their main question is, who is really running the village? Because meetings they go to, they talk, and they said, it seems like people aren't really listening to us. Mm-hmm. We're told this is the way it's going to be. So their many citizens' big question is, who's really running the village?
So is it a question of what the staff is doing when you say running the village, or are you talking about policies that the village trustees and the village president are putting in place, or don't people care? Are they just asking sort of who's in charge amongst the staff and the trustees both?
Many people have said they don't think the village board is running the village anymore, and they really don't know if the village board is getting all the facts when they vote on different things. And I've talked to previous members of the village board, and they told me different issues that have come up. They were led to believe a certain way, and after the vote was taken or after they weren't members of the village board anymore, they found out differently. So many people are wondering if the village board is really getting the correct information, or are they just getting the information that certain people or a certain group wants them to hear before the vote is taken?
And so you're interested in getting in to a village leadership position so that you can see that there's better input to the village trustees, and so that they can make better decisions. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, that is, Mike. And growing up in a village, I remember back years ago, the village board used to go out, walk around town, look at different issues, and then they would go and they would discuss it and make their decision. Previous village board members, like I said, we were led to believe. Now, if you're making a vote or taking a vote on something and you don't really know the whole issue, how can you really make the correct vote? Unless you're going out looking at it and getting everybody's viewpoint on it, not just what you're told, because there could be different side to it.
Sort of a boots on the ground approach, or management by walking around, that kind of an approach is the kind of thing that you would like to see the Board of Trustees doing more of. Is that what you're saying here?
Yes. Being a smaller village, I personally think that the village board could go out and look at different issues and stuff like that before they sit at the meeting and they make a decision. If you don't look at nothing, how can you make a decision when you haven't seen something?
Okay, let's move on to a question about the economy. The economy is on most people's minds right now, especially jobs. According to the Census Bureau in Littleshoot, one out of every five jobs are created by small businesses with less than 20 employees. Another two out of the five are for mid-sized businesses with 2 to 100 employees. And over 95% of the businesses in Littleshoot are either small or mid-sized. How will you support existing small and mid-sized businesses and encourage the development of new ones?
Well, I think for one thing, creating ordinances that pertain, that small businesses have to follow, can create a financial burden on them. And most small businesses in this economy, a lot of them are just struggling to make ends meet. So if you're going to create ordinances that they have to start going by and create more financial burden on them, that's not helping out the small business. You can also look at the ordinance when a small business comes and says, well, we're having the problem with this here. You should be able to make exceptions. You know, you might have to change that ordinance for that particular business. You know, lot line changes, in an example, you know. And to help out the small business, you know, I'm all for it. I'm not saying give them the bank, you know,
right,
because that's not fair to everybody else.
Sure.
But there are ways that they can be helped out.
It's interesting what you're saying about exceptions. One of the things that I was told about Village Board of Trustees is that in a village you need both ordinances, which are laws, and you also need policies on how to implement those ordinances. And ordinances are often written without exceptions, and the exceptions are become a part of the policies. And there's been a lot of discussion over the past couple of years about how do you write in exceptions into policies that are reasonable. And the board has said in the past, well, we really don't want any exceptions. The policies are written without exceptions. But if you have policies where there are no exceptions, then every time you run into a new, unique situation, there's a temptation to change the policy. And if you change the policy every time you look at the policy, it's not really a policy. It's just an ad hoc decision every time. And that sounded kind of like what you were getting at with small business, that that you want to have the flexibility for each small business, but you also want to have a kind of a uniform approach for developing small businesses. Is that a fair assessment then of where you want to go with policies that are flexible but still apply to all businesses in Little Chute?
Yes, that would be correct. I'll give you an example on the village. Now, some people have said to me, when they redid our street, they told us it's a policy, it has to be done in concrete.
Okay.
Now, a couple of years back, they redid a whole bunch of streets. They were redone in blacktop.
Right.
The following year, the streets were done in concrete, and some people that live on them streets, they said, we asked, how come all them other streets last year were done in blacktop? We wanted blacktop. And we were told it's the village policy to do them in concrete.
Right.
Well, it's village policy, and then why were all them other streets done in blacktop? If you're going to have a policy, you can't tell the citizens, we're not going to deviate from our policy. But then when it comes to the village's side of it, they can deviate from the policy.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Our next question is about government finances. When we think about government finances, many of us immediately think taxes, but of course taxes are only one way to finance government. Fees are another means of generating revenue, sometimes a very hotly debated means. Fees can be paid directly to the village or to third parties for village-mandated products and services. How do you view the use of fees versus taxes to fund the activities of the village of Little Chute?
Creating fees, I'm not for it. And there are differences between certain types of fees. I'll give you an example for picking up the recyclables. Before that was just done, you weren't charged a fee for it. Now they created a fee to pick up the recyclables. Well, at the end of the year, you can't say, we held the line on taxes. We didn't raise taxes, but you created all these fees. That's still taking money, more money out of people's pockets. I'll give you an example of fees would be the swimming pool. The village funds the swimming pool. If you want to use the swimming pool, you pay a fee to use it. That I have no problem with, because you have the choice of using the pool and not using the pool. It would be the same thing as the high school, public school.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can go to that public school. If you want to go to a football game or basketball game, you're charged a fee to get in. But it's your choice to go to that. It's not being paid for by the taxpayers.
Let's go back to the swimming pool example.
Okay.
The swimming pool is partly paid for by fees and partly paid for by taxes. But sometimes there are some serious disagreements about how much of the general levy should subsidize the pool fees. For instance, if we charged people the actual cost of the pool, we would be charging twice as much, I think, as say Appleton or Kaukauna. And so we subsidize like the other the villages and cities. But there's always this struggle with how much do we subsidize the pool out of general tax funds, and how much do we actually still charge people on a fee for service basis.
For one thing, you would have to look at how much the subsidy would be. It would get to a point where you'd have to look back and question, financially wise, is it wise to be subsidizing so much money? And right now, you don't know what that would be. So, I mean, it could, okay, if it's, example, if it gets up to $200,000 where you're subsidizing $200,000 in a year, financially wise, is it worth it? You'd have to look at basically how much it is costing, you know? I mean, if it's, say, $30,000, $40,000 a year, well, that I don't see any problem with, you know, because it's a nice pool. It brings people in, you know, and
it's for the children mostly.
Correct.
As well. Yes.
Correct. You
yes.
know, and then you have your swimming lessons and stuff like that, you know. So if you didn't have the pool, people, like you say, people would have to go elsewhere, but you also have to look at the cost.
Right. Thank you for that, Bob. Let's move on to the question about transparency in government. Wisconsin's public record law requires open access to village records for all citizens. However, getting copies of village documents can sometimes be complicated. For example, information packets given to village trustees in open session sometimes include documents that visitor packets don't have. Also, announcements about village contracts and agreements often aren't widely publicized, and this has been recently raised as a statewide issue. How do you propose making village records as freely available as possible to the general public?
Well, with the technology we have today, with the internet and everything else, it can be posted on the internet. There is one problem with that. Many older people don't have computers. Mm-hmm. And many people don't like to have to go and say, what is this policy or that, you know? So,
you mean people would rather not have to go to the village hall kind of a thing?
Yes.
Too. Yes.
Yes. So, we have a very good library system. It could be posted at the library or something put at the library. I know years back they had stuff at the library because there were a few times I came to look stuff up, but I noticed a lot of stuff was out of date. It wasn't kept up to date. It could be posted at the village hall, just inside the doorway, where people won't have to go in and to the clerk or whoever, you know, there's a bulletin board there. They could post it on the bulletin board, and anybody want to see it that don't have access to the computer at home, or people that don't know how to use a computer, because many older people don't have them, they could just go and look it up right there. You know, it would be for anybody to see.
Well, that's interesting, your comment about giving documents to the library. I don't think I've ever heard that comment before. It's a neat idea. You could actually give records in electronic form to the library for anyone to view at the library on, say, a library computer, couldn't you? Is that what you have in mind, that kind of an arrangement?
Yes. And people that don't know how to use a computer could go to the library and ask one of the people working at the library, could you help me look this up?
Yeah.
And they could have everything right here. That way you're not, because many people don't like to have to go to the village hall, go in there and ask that. And the library is very accessible.
And the library already has newspapers and the like that people look at to see what's happening in the village. And that actually seems to make a lot of sense to me.
Yes. And one other thing, when they're changing village ordinances, they publish them in the paper. But I've had people say to me, older people, I see they're going to change this ordinance. It's ordinance number whatever. And they say, what's that ordinance about? Because there's no description on what the ordinance says. So I think what they should have when they want to change an ordinance, they should publish it, what the ordinance says now, and what they want it to say. Then people won't have to question, what's this ordinance? What does it say? Because going back, people that have a computer can check it out on the computer, but they don't know what they're going to want it to say. But the people that don't have access to the computer or don't know how to use one, they have no idea.
Okay. Let's move on to our last question. Let's talk about the village's downtown area. In recent years, there's been some development along Main Street, although much of the focus has been on the Dutch Boys project and the Windmill project. But these developments are both to the west of the village hall, and there's a portion of the downtown that's to the east of the hall as well. How do we develop the area east of the village hall? How can we keep the existing businesses there and attract new businesses to that area east of the village hall?
This is a problem that all small towns and villages face. They're all trying to get their downtowns redeveloped, attract more businesses. I think the big question for downtown Little Chute is the windmill. Everybody hears those windmills going to be built, and it's going to bring a lot of visitors in. If the windmill does what they say it's going to do, it will attract businesses. Because people will see all these people coming, and they'll say, maybe we should open up this type of business in downtown Little Chute, because they have all these people coming to see the windmill. And our downtown is relatively short, so the people would only have to walk a block or two to visit whatever shop or store or eating establishment is within that two-block area. But I think the big thing is the windmill. And I think people right now are sitting back waiting to see what happens with the windmill.
There's also a parking question involved with the downtown. If they're going to be thousands of people visiting the windmill every year, many of them will arrive by bus, of course, for tours and that kind of a thing. But if you're talking about attracting a small business to the downtown in conjunction with the windmill, then you're going to have individuals and families coming in. And one of the questions that comes up over and over again is, where do they park? Have you thought through questions about parking and public versus private parking and businesses that don't have easy access to parking and the like?
Well, right in the downtown vicinity, the village owns quite a bit of property right now. If the windmill attracts the people like they think it's going to, and parking becomes an issue, the village already owns quite a bit of property, which they could turn some of that into parking.
Okay, well, thank you very much for this opportunity. I really appreciate your interviewing on littleshootmatters.org. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Mike.